You're listening to the Product Podcast from Product School, featuring the best product leaders from Silicon Valley and beyond. If you're an aspiring product manager looking for your first PM role, or an experienced PM looking to level up your skills and advance your career, visit productschool.com to learn about our certifications and how we'll get you there. In today's episode, we've brought together a panel of brilliant product leaders from LinkedIn, Microsoft, Google, and Meta to discuss different company and product cultures. You'll get a chance to hear about their individual experiences and get a better understanding of how to successfully transition into a new company and blend in with the culture.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to Different Companies and Different Cultures with Product School. My name is Kirsten Vandetta. I have been in product management for about 8 years, mostly on the B2B SaaS side and enterprise platforms. And I've led teams in new product development, growth PM, digital transformation. I'm currently at LinkedIn leading a team of digital transformation product managers. But we are not here to talk about me, so let's get the panel introduced here. We'll start with Stephanie.
Hi, everyone. I'm Stephanie Bauman. I have been in technical software product management for about the last 9 years with 17 years overall in software management. I am currently working with in manufacturing space on software for kind of IoT standards at a company called Thermon, and was most recently at Microsoft. So happy to be here.
Thanks, Stephanie. How about you, Johnny?
Hello, everyone. My name is Johnny Chang. I'm currently at Google as a product manager. And prior to Google, I was at several other companies, Netflix, Lyft, LinkedIn, collectively at about 10 years or so in product. It came from software engineering background. Nice to be here.
Thanks, Johnny. And Shovik?
Yeah, hey, everyone. My name is Shovik. I'm currently about product manager at Meta. I work on our infrastructure services. Before that, I was at AWS. I was also working on infra. I was working on Amazon S3. Even before that, I worked at a bunch of edtech startups and have been a PM for about 10 years now.
Great. Sounds like lots of movement. So we have the right panel to talk about different companies and different cultures and product. So as PMs grow, we take leaps from one product organization to another. We run into different product cultures, and they can be very different than the last one we were accustomed to. And so this is because really product organizations can reflect a lot of things, right? It can be the company's culture, the team's collective mindset, where the product organization sits on product management maturity level and their strategy, their overall organization, and how they approach the work. And we have so many opportunities as PMs. We can move from startups to large tech firms. We can reverse and pare down and go to a startup. We can switch industries. We can be different types of PMs, so B2B, B2C. And we can even, you know, digital versus hardware. So with the opportunities being endless, it means so is sort of our requirement for learning how not to only settle into these new organizations, but to lead when moving from one company or product organization to another. So I'd love to kick off this panel with a question, and I'll start with Stephanie. Stephanie, what would you say as you moved from Dell, Amazon, VMware, Microsoft, what was something you would say PMs should understand about the importance of company and product culture and how PMs really operate or onboard into new cultures?
Yeah, absolutely. So I have moved around a lot and been in a lot of different product organizations. And while the products themselves were pretty similar, the cultures were really different. So one thing I can say to get started on engaging and understanding, you know, what your product means to your customers' customers, and your company is really understanding who the active user personas are that are using the company. And that can happen from a lot of different perspectives. And the way you achieve that to understand your internal culture and then the culture with which, you know, your product needs to interact with your customers. So you can start off internally by kind of putting on your BA hat almost to some extent and mapping out some of the business processes and understanding the different orgs and individuals within your orgs that cross-functionally will interact with your product, from sales to design, to marketing, to, you know, the technical engineers themselves, to, you know, the field engineers who are actually actively out there helping to troubleshoot the product or helping to educate customers on how to use the product and continue to buy features that are being built into product. Another thing you can do to kind of understand the cultural effect of your product is to really understand the personas of your customers. So who are the buyers? Who are the evaluators? Who are the end users? And what are the different types of end users that you've got? And that really helps you kind of understand culturally the way that your product has evolved in the organization, how it has evolved for your customers. And even engaging with your customers' customers can help you understand, you know, okay, if they are, you know, integrating your product with their systems to achieve goals for their customers, you know, what kind of cultural fit does your product have with those cross-functional stakeholders outside your organization? So really kind of putting on those different hats and wearing, you know, the hat of your customer, identifying the personas and understanding the different interaction models with your product really helps you get a leg up on, you know, the culture, how to engage with the product and how to have immediate success and hit the ground running.
Thank you so much. Shovik, what do you think? Same question to you about the importance of company and product culture as you transition.
Yeah, so I echo a lot of what Stephanie said. You know, I think a lot of core PM skills continue to stay the same. Like, you still have to know your personas. You still have to know what they care about. What are their pain points? I think what I've seen culture play a huge role into how products get built is a function of the company culture itself. Like, for example, and this is also like very org specific too, because different orgs within the same company tend to have can have very different culture. Like, for example, at AWS, because I was working for Amazon S3, which is, you know, a highly mature product, it's one of the core foundational service for AWS, things were a lot more top-down, right? So the expectation was that we already have a strategy. Let's figure out how to best execute the strategy when we think about building products. While, you know, at the same time, when you're working with a much smaller team on the early stages of a maturity cycle, you don't necessarily have a strategy. So a lot of that then becomes, where do we want to be 5 years from now? Where do we want to be 10 years from now? So, like, depending on the cycle, you, as a PM, you tend to operate in very different roles. So that, to me, has been a big learning moment. But also at Meta tends to be, I guess, you know, Meta is closer to Google than at AWS at being a very bottom-up driven culture. That would mean that, you know, can I identify opportunities to move really, really fast at a problem really, really quickly and be okay to fail fast as well? While on the cloud infra side, there is very little room to fail. So if you're trading off between, you know, moving fast versus making absolutely the right call, product culture can play a really big role in identifying what is the trade-off that you care more about. So that has also influenced a lot of my moves as well. So I recommend as PMs move around identifying maturity model as a big factor in making those decisions.
Thank you. Tanya?
Yeah, I think product culture has external aspects and internal aspect to it. I think Stephanie and Selvig both cover both pretty well. I think the only thing that I'm adding to the recommendation would be that I think internally, it's the company culture that definitely influences how we work and how we operate. But specifically, understanding the business, understand your customer, could actually impact how the specific product organization makes decisions differently. For instance, if you work in a consumer product world versus a enterprise product world, decision making likely will have to be different. Because the nature of the product, the life cycle of the product launches are different. And so start from being familiar with those aspects, both externally and internally, and figure out even at the more nuanced level within your PM work, within your cross-functional team, how does the team make decision, right? Is that a product-driven decision-making? Is that engineering decision-making? Is that relatively top-down or bottom-up? Is that primarily decided by a direct responsible individual, or is that always a collaborative decision-making, meaning that we always try to get consensus, right? I've experienced all of these flavors and all of these different combinations, but it's important that you know there are these variants. And the first thing when you transition to a new work is to try to answer those questions. And the rest of your, onboarding and being more successful will be much more productive from there.
Thank you. So it sounds like we have some agreement across the board, but we're really covering, you know, what you need to do as a PM doesn't necessarily change, but understanding the different company culture, where your product org is at, the type of product you have really makes a difference. And so digging into all of those spaces. I love what you just said, Johnny, about, you know, is it engineering driven? Is it product led? I think that's such a big piece of how the product organization runs. And so if you come from something that's very different, say you go from product led to maybe very strong in engineering side, it could be a bit of a culture shock, but learning the way everybody works is helpful in that transition. So as we kind of think about, there's the whys, you know, recognizing that we have differences, what are some of the top, you know, maybe 1 to 3 skills a PM could really develop or have in their tool belt so that they can successfully make transitions in what might be fairly different companies or product cultures? If it's okay, Johnny, I'll start with you on that.
Thanks. So I think the top one I can think of is the flexibility, especially in your mindset, right? Don't assume that the things will work the same from where you came from. Always assume that it's going to be very different. And so be ready to unlearn and learning from scratch, especially for how you operate as a PM, is very important. Not saying that the skills that you developed in the past cannot be leveraged. Those can definitely be leveraged for the most part, in my opinion. But the way you make decisions, the way you operate, how you become successful in the org will be very different. So what got you there might not get you what got you here might not get you there is the mindset. I'll probably pass it on to, you know, other part of the panel to comment on other skills. But I think this is number one by a great distance.
Did you have something you wanted to add, Shivik?
Sure. I think flexibility is super important. And, you know, being aware that an environment is different is super important too, because you don't want to, you know, find out when it's too late. So what I would say is also critical is to, you know, bring best practices from your past PM jobs. Often a culture is built not through elimination, but through just, you know, status quo. So if you are in an organization that, you know, is built in a certain way and you have a clear way to improve processes or including more customer empathy, not being shy to do that is pretty critical, because often, you know, new PMs sort of tend to take a little bit of time to understand the lay of the land, right? And there is a general tendency to like go with the flow, right? So I would caution against over-indexing on the new culture, but also bring back what worked in the past and bring back some of the unique things that you bring to the table, which is why I think you were hired, right? Like, and the culture needs to be always evolving. So bringing your best practices, bringing, you know, what worked in the past and some of the processes, especially that you are very familiar with and are good at, if they're applicable, is critical to make the organization better.
Thank you. And the, I know the moderator is not supposed to agree with things, but I love this. I love that Johnny said, you know, you have to unlearn. And then adding Shovik saying, really, yes, unlearn, but also bring those strengths that you have, because that organization may need them. That might have been why you were hired. Sometimes that's tricky, really, to understand where you can add value and where you do need to go with the flow. So I love that. Stephanie, would love to give you an opportunity to answer the same question. Sort of, what should we have in our tool belt to navigate and thrive here?
Thank you. Yeah, elaborating on what Johnny and Suvik said, you know, flexibility, adaptability, and bringing what you have in your tool belt. And building on that is, you know, just really having the ability to kind of adapt and approach the individuals that you work with in your organization sort of as though they were your customers, like keep that customer mindset with them and approach with empathy. And when you're trying to identify, you know, okay, what do I have in my tool belt? What do I have from the past? You know, what examples really worked in these situations? It's always a good idea to provide an example, even if it's scrubbed of content, so that people can kind of start seeing, okay, I'm adding some content in from the organization that I'm learning about, and I'm showing how this can start to deliver incremental value, as well as verbally communicating how that value can be delivered within, you know, the sort of frame of what you're working with today. So you may not be able to go from like 0 to 100 with the example or the tool that you have, but you can start introducing the ideas and the concepts and providing examples to the team so that if they don't have exposure to this within their culture, like say, for example, people have been there for a long time or there hasn't been a lot of movement, which, you know, honestly is not a bad thing at any company. But you can approach with empathy and kind of understand, okay, where's my team at? What experience do they have with this artifact I have in my tool belt? How can I show them an example of the artifact in operation? And then how can we gently build this into the process so that you're immediately delivering value, you're doing it incrementally, and you're approaching with a lot of empathy? And I think that kind of really builds on what Johnny and Suvik said of how to leverage your skills.
I love that. There's a great question in the chat. I would love to read to you guys if you're okay with that. Alan Chang is asking, have you been able to assess the PM culture during the interview process? Does anyone want to take that question?
I think you should be able to assess that in the interview process, especially when it's your turn to ask questions. So make sure you always prepare questions, you know, not only to prepare how to answer the interviewer's question. I think that's important. With regard to how to best learn the culture during the interview with what question, I think that's probably yet another huge topic outside of the core scope of this discussion. But there's definitely a way that you can at least get a high-level sense of what the culture will be like.
I'll add to that, to what Johnny said. There's a couple of questions I've used in interview that help and are not too leading, where you gently ask the question, you know, do you perceive the org as being more engineering-led or product-led? And that can immediately give you some inferences. And another question that I found works pretty well is asking, you know, what tool stack do you use? And on face value, that might not seem very valuable, but they start to tell you, hey, we use Confluence. Oh, and that's where we keep requirements. And our product managers tend to do this when they have requirements. Oh, and that, and then we keep wireframes here and we manage tickets here. So it gives you some insight as to whether, you know, they have, you know, very requirements-driven culture, very ticket-driven culture, if it's product or engineering-led. And it's an easy softball to kind of throw during the interview to start pulling on those threads a little bit without revealing too much of what you might be concerned about or leading them in a direction that, you know, they may tell you something you want to hear.
I'd also like push to talk to other people. I think if you're interviewing for a PM role, you're likely being interviewed by, well, other PMs. And I think that gives you like some survivorship bias, right? So you want to talk to like, hey, can I speak to some of the engineering peers or some of the cross-functional peers? And I think that kind of reveals insights into how the culture is. Like for me, road mapping, like how a company or a product or an org does roadmap tells me more than anything else about the PM culture that I care about. So I would just go to cross-functional people and ask them, like, how do you contribute to roadmap? That kind of gives them an opportunity to talk about their work, but at the same time gives me some signals on how the org behaves cross-functionally as a whole, which tends to be pretty important to me.
Also, I would like to add a couple of points to this, which is that actually, you know, based on the questions that they ask you, sometimes you can also get a sense of what the culture is like. For instance, right, if they give you a situation, like what would you do in this situation? And that situation most likely is going to be the situation that you are going to deal with as a PM. For instance, if the situation is engineering come to you and ask you whether we should build this product, feature. It seemed like a great idea. How do you respond? It probably tells you that happens a lot, right? And you as a PM should think about how to best respond to that, and so on and so forth. And the second thing I want to add is, I think we are in a different time right now where we have a lot of digital resources all over the web, right? So not only in the conversation that you can try to get a sense of the culture, you can go to different websites where people talk about company culture, right? And try to get a sense of that as well. Even ask questions, specific questions you have. Chances are that the community will respond to you.
Thank you. I think I want to circle back just real quick, and it is kind of about different companies and cultures. But one of the things that we had mentioned earlier is like looking at something that's either engineering led or product led. I want to make sure that we're not necessarily calling out either real quick, which one is better. It's about what suits you. And sometimes if it's a highly technical product, you may need it to be engineering led. But there's a great question in here about sort of an example between an engineering led product organization and a product led. Does anyone want to take a quick pass at that? I know it's slightly off topic, but I think it may add some framing.
Sure. I can talk about it because this is a pretty straightforward problem for infra orgs. So infra orgs tend to be extremely technical. So there is a general assumption that it's very engineering led. So I would say that's not necessarily true. So an engineering-led org, just for an example, would be for a highly technical product, but at the same time, likely in a high maturity stage as well, where a big part of your focus is scalability, operations, and things like that. However, you take a really technical product, but in its early stages, a big part is making decisions on what features to build. What does an MVP look like, which then sometimes becomes a product-led org. So ideally, an organization would decide what kind of leadership makes the most sense for a product. So those are some of the examples. So just to give like an even more practical example, for a product at AWS that generates, you know, billions and billions of dollars, and like several companies depend to stay up depending on the services, those will be very engineering led because most of the decisions is keeping the lights on, scalability, operations. Does that help?
I can also speak to another perspective to build on that. That's totally true. There's also kind of some company culture that's engineering led, not always because of the nature of the product being more technical, but the fact that the company has, you know, the culture that everyone has their product heads on. I think Google, for instance, is one of such company, at least in the org that I'm a part of, where everybody thinks product. Everybody are passionate about the product that we work on. And we also have the highly collaborative culture, meaning that product decision doesn't have to be made purely by a product manager, but instead everybody can chime in and provide idea. And so that's another scenario where it could be not necessarily product led, but engineering led or cross-functional team led.
Anything to add on that, Stephanie?
Yeah, to kind of build on the type of product, like the category, you know, in infrastructure, for example, like if you've got Kubernetes-based infrastructure that can be very technical and require an extremely, you know, specific skill set that, you know, not even all engineers may specifically have. And in that case, a lot of the core requirements, like the infrastructure requirements, the architecture, some of the scalability can be very engineering led. But where you become a partner and an advocate with engineering is to go and get that outside perspective and that cross-functional perspective from your organization. And this is kind of continuing to build on culture, identifying what inputs you need as a product manager to bring to engineering to influence, you know, the scalability, to influence the architecture, to influence those decisions. And that's where you two become partners and where you become advocates for one another to really truly build a good product. And that also emphasizes, you know, what was being said about everyone in the organization wearing that product hat. Product management kind of brings in that specific skill set where the Kubernetes engineer brings in their own specific skill set, and you complement one another to kind of build that successful relationship and product.
That's great. And I take it back, Himanshu. I was wrong. That was not off topic at all. It was directly on topic. That was a great conversation. Thank you, guys. So we've talked about some tools you can have in your tool belt. I love the questions in here from the audience about going into interviews and sort of seeing how those cultures might be different and sort of flagging the ones that you're interested in working for. I think it would also be great to hear from you guys what a PM can do as they transition into a different company and a different culture, what they can do maybe in the first 90 days to really set themselves up for success. So we will start with Shuvik.
Yeah, so I don't think there's like a fixed path to do this. I can tell you what worked for me. So typically the first 90 days is a good litmus test of, you know, do I really enjoy this? And to be able to answer that question, I try to talk to as many people as I can. And to me, I fully understand that talking to people comes with like spending a decent amount of social capital, right? Like you have so many hours in the day, you also want to get stuff done. But I think it's really, really helpful to talk to not just, you know, your direct influence teams, like your engineering manager and engineering partners, but also teams that are, you know, your customers or, you know, connective tissue between your org or your team and your customers. Typically what I've seen that talking to people about what they enjoy, about the products that have come out, how they have reacted to support, all of this gives me a lot of insights into what kind of impact the product makes. And I think a big part of fulfillment comes from, okay, whatever I built, did it actually do something? Did it solve a real problem? So getting an answer to that kind of helps me a lot. And I think from the culture side of things, I think it's important to be a little bit authentic. I know it's super hard to, at the beginning, right? So, but I think it's important to know that, like, the people that you're working with, do you actually enjoy working with them? Like, would you like to be, it's very hard virtually, but would you like to be in the same room as them at some point in the office and actually have a conversation? So I think those two things, like the impact of the product and the culture of the people that I work closely with, getting that through interviews, through interactions, through getting feedback from your own work, I think there's a lot of these signals that can generate enough amount of momentum for you to have a good understanding within the first 90 days.
Thanks, Shuvik. Johnny, how about you?
Yeah, totally agree. I think building connections, connecting with people is a top priority. They help you on board. You learn from them. You understand the culture from talking to them. And then it sets you up for longer term success in this organization. I think two other things I would do in my first 90 days is obviously we have to spend a lot of time doing the homework, right? You know, you find resources as much as you can. You do your due diligence so that you can actually have even more productive conversation when you step into the conversation with folks. That also kind of show your proactiveness and drive. And the third thing is, you might not want to rush into making any contribution within the 30 days, but you might want to get to a quick win at least within 90 days. Which is 3 months. That doesn't have to be a product launch. It can be anything, such as what engineering team needs. They're blocked for a long time, and you step in to unblock them. That's a win. You help them answer an important business question that they don't have answers to. That's a win, and so on and so forth. So these are the two more things I will add to that.
Thanks, Johnny.
And I think building on that, you know, what Shuvik and Johnny said, you know, building your network and then achieving wins. As you're, you know, building your network, I find that there's always like a few boilerplate questions that you can use when you're performing, you know, kind of your introductions, and it's almost like you're doing an investigative interview with this person, this cross-functional leader in your company. You can ask questions, you know, not just about, you know, what's your role and how do you interact with product, but you can also ask, you know, who else can I talk to and connect with in your org to continue building your network. And if you're talking to like a director or an SVP, then you get, you know, a couple more IC folks maybe, or managers, who can really get you deeply connected to more of the stakeholders you'll need. Like, for example, cross-functional engineers to resolve a bug in an integration module or something like that. And then another quick way to kind of do that is add questions about, you know, how do you perceive, or what do you think product can do to help you? Like, what can I do to help you in my role? And you'll find that a lot of people will start to tell you quickly, well, you know, there's a couple of, you know, hard things that we're working on. We've got a couple of problems. Like Johnny said, we have a couple of blockers. And that's where you start to identify, okay, this person and these cross-functional stakeholders, they helped me identify, are connected to this quick win that I might be able to achieve. And you can kind of prioritize after your interviews and your notes and look at your list and kind of prioritize which quick wins you can kind of go after and build trust with those stakeholders and continue to build your network and start kind of building up your cachet in the company that way. And it's just, that's just kind of another thing in your tool belt that you might try in engaging with a new culture and a new company.
Thank you. So there's lots of good questions coming in from the audience. I want to be mindful of time. I know some of you have hard stops. So if anyone needs to bounce, please feel free. Product School is letting us go over if you want to. So happy to move into some more questions here. But Stephanie, I know you're one with a hard stop. Would you like to do your final thoughts now, or are you okay to stay a few more?
I can put in my final thoughts, I guess. Thank you for that, Kirsten. Okay. Just as some final thoughts, you know, getting, you know, to be part of a new culture is just as much about what you want to get out of working at that company as it is what they're hoping, you know, what their goals are in hiring you, and you know, what they feel you bring and can contribute. So, you know, again, just identify those quick wins, figure out how you can contribute and start building trust with your teams, and figure out where you really want to deliver that value, like where you feel your skills and all of the items in your tool belt early on are going to start setting the tone for how you want to engage with the team and how you think you can impart your product vision and skills to the company. Because like we said in the beginning, that's what Johnny and, you know, Shuvik were saying. It's really the reason they hired you, because you've got some unique skills. So it's really, you know, adapting to the culture, approaching it with a lot of empathy, building your network, figuring out what some of the problems are, identifying some top wins. And in those wins you identify, figure out how your unique skill sets and tool belt really can help you shine and, you know, show who you are.
Thanks so much, Stephanie. Appreciate your time.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah. So we have another question, Johnny and Shuvik. We have one that says, if I ask you what is culture in a nutshell in product management, what would you say that is?
I'll let Johnny answer this question because I don't have an answer. I mean, nutshell is, okay, I'll go. I mean, I think nutshell is tough because, you know, this is what this whole session is about, how different orgs are totally different, right? I think the culture that I'm a big fan of is where PMs are not afraid to step in, even like no task left behind as a culture. I've been in many orgs where, you know, I also went to business school, which is kind of like a place where, you know, you always talk strategy, you always talk like 30,000 feet or whatever, right? So I feel a strong PM solves problems by solving things that, you know, almost nobody would do because they are just, you know, ugly or big or challenging or sometimes even menial. So I built a lot of rapport with my engineering team by burning down a 200 ticket queue. And it was annoying and nobody wanted to do it, but it helped me build credibility. It also helped me learn a lot about what customers were saying for free. So I think no task left behind is a good way to put a PM culture.
Yeah, this is really a tough question. And thank you, Solveig, for jumping in to answer first, which allows me a little bit more time to think about it. I don't have a perfect answer either, but I think for me, a culture is value, right? Core value, as well as how the team operate generally speaking. And that can mean many things, right? So how we operate matters a lot in product management, because you are not only a part of the operation, but also you're a leader in the operation, and you have to figure out a way to lead in the way that this organization works. That's how I would interpret what a product culture is.
Thanks, Johnny. So it looks like we've lost Shubik and Stephanie now. So I'll wrap up real quick. Johnny, if you could give us your final thought. Oh, he's back.
Sorry, my browser just rebooted. So
I thought you were like, I'm done. This is my last question.
I thought I saw something wrong to drive him off.
He tapped out. are you guys okay with two more questions, let's say?
Sure.
Okay. So let me see. There's actually quite a few in here. If you guys want to scroll through, you're welcome to as well. There's a LinkedIn user, it's generic, who also just brought up an interesting point. So recommendation for assessment of who the PM org rolls up to can kind of also give you an idea of what your product organization might work like. So does it report up through sales, report up through marketing, engineering? So that's a great point. Thank you, LinkedIn user. there's also, let's see, how to understand sort of the company politics that are part of the company culture that can kind of be part of the onboarding process, right? You guys talked about this earlier, sort of digging in to how the business works. It looks like the question here is, do you just observe and learn the politics at that point when you're first onboarding?
I think that it probably also begs the question of the definition of what politics mean, right? I think different people might have different answer to that. But I think politics is a part of the culture, I would say, because it's a part of how we operate, how the team operate. It might sound negative. It probably has a negative notion to it whenever you talk about it. But in my experience, it's inevitable, right? Politics exists whenever a group of human exists, and that's kind of the broader definition of politics. So, how do we learn about the politics? I think it's the same way of how we learn about the culture, which is to observe, yes, to be in it, to talk to people, and that's the way you learn.
Yeah, I agree with that. I think when I think about like politics and a negative connotation, I think it often translates to a core group of people having significantly higher influence than their peers, which often like ticks people off. And I've seen that all the time. But, you know, I think at the same time, like we kind of, I think it's important to be aware of your control and, you know, what you can control in terms of company culture. So I've been pretty blissfully unaware of who has influence, you know, just having a long-term vision, acting on that vision, getting buy-in from your stakeholders and your managers or skips or skip is typically a good way to, you know, be ingrained in that politics and maybe one day become that person who has disproportionate influence. So, you know,
That's true. That's a lot of PM, right? Don't we? We have to influence without authority. So you definitely have to understand the politics. Not sure you have to use them all, but so we'll go into our last question. I want to give everybody a chance to kind of give us your final thoughts, your takeaways of what it's like to be a PM and transitioning to different companies and cultures. How about we start with Shubhik?
Yeah. A lot of my PM friends might disagree, but I inherently think PM is a generalist vocation. So that's the kind of culture and the pursuit that I'm trying to follow, where I'm trying to do a bunch of different things and not tying myself hard to one of them. And I think that's why also I love the job. Kind of gets me to do pretty much whatever I want. So that's how I define the PM role. And when you think about moving to a different org, moving to a different culture, I try to see it as part of the job is to understand a new tech stack, understand a new set of customers, consumer, enterprise. There's a lot of noise out there, but ultimately you are building products for customers and you're solving problems. So keeping that as a guiding tenet helps me to do jobs at different orgs or companies.
And there has been a lot of great discussions and questions, so I wouldn't repeat what's been discussed. The only thing that I would add as the final thought is the reminder that it can feel overwhelming whenever you step into a new role. Even if you're a PM with 20 years of experience in the industry, because as we discussed, things will be different, at least to some degree. And you will feel all of a sudden that there's so much that you don't know and people around you don't trust you just yet, right? And you can probably get this imposter syndrome back very easily. And so when it happens to you, just remind yourself that it's normal, it's a part of the process, and just proceed with what you're supposed to do as a PM, right? And you will be fine.
I love it. From both of you, going out on a high note. I love that advice. So thank you for joining us today. Different companies, different cultures. I will turn it back over to Product School. Thank you so much.
Thanks, everyone.
Thanks.
Thanks for listening to the Product Podcast. If you enjoyed this episode, it would mean the world to us if you would rate and review us on Apple Podcasts. Taking the time to write just a few sentences about what you love most about the show will help us improve it and reach even more product people around the world. And when you're done, why not reward yourself with some free product management content and resources over at productschool.com? Until next time, stay product-led.